Welcome back to A Fine Time for Healing, a place where your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. Today we have with us Carol Oakley. And Carol is the author of Embracing the Ties That Bind, I'm Still With You, and You and Soul to Soul Connections. Oh, I'm Still With You and Soul to Soul Connections. She has communicated with souls who have crossed into the spirit world through thousands of private and group sessions. She has earned a reputation in her geographical area as the real deal among psychic mediums. She travels nationally to speak and teach workshops, as well as maintaining a practice in mediumship based in Pittsburgh, PA. Welcome, Carol. It's so great to have you.
Fine, thank you.
So, when did you first realize that you had this gift?
Well, first off, I never term it a gift. It's a skill. Not until my late 30s, and that was through something very unpleasant that happened. It was actually a catastrophe, and that was a fire, which set me squarely on this pathway of doing healing work and mediumship. So, you know, ironically, when I was a child, I was really afraid of death. I remember when my first grandparent died, I was horrified. You know, I was 10 years old at the time to go to the funeral home. And so I never was really comfortable, and I had no one to talk to, because no one else in my family has this particular type of skill or ability. So if I could have one wish today, it would be that I would have had someone to talk to about my feelings, my sensitivity. But I really didn't sharpen those until I was taken off of the pathway of a totally different type of business, mm-hmm. and put squarely onto this pathway. And even though I have always been interested in the paranormal, when I was a child, I was reading books on UFOs, the Bermuda Triangle, ghosts, and I was always questioning, what about this? What happens when we die? Where do we go? So I had that interest from the time I was very young, but I really never developed till I was in my late 30s.
Interesting. I've always had that interest as well. I have not developed a skill, but I've always been interested in the paranormal. It just fascinates me. And, you know, I think when I was young, I was afraid of death. I remember saying to my mother all the time, you know, I don't want to die. Well, she didn't really have good answers for me, but, you know, but I have absolutely no fear of that now, because I've read so much, talked to so many people. I'm pretty well versed in what this is all about, and I truly believe that we don't die. Right? We don't
well,
die.
Well, I can tell you 100% we don't. And sometimes I kid around, I say, I don't believe in life after death. And people will say, what? I know it. You know, it's not a belief with me. I have had thousands of firsthand experiences and experiences on my own as well, you know, that were very out of the box, very different, and all related to, you know, the afterlife as far as I've experienced them.
Yeah, I've heard, you know, I have talked to several people who have had near-death experiences, people who have researched near-death experiences. In the over 12 years I've been doing this show, I've interviewed several mediums. And, you know, most of what I hear is very similar. And it's because of that that I realized this is a very real thing. So everybody's probably thinking, so if we don't die, where do we go? Where do we go when we leave our body?
Well, we go on to a higher vibration than this earth plane. This earth plane is very dense. If we talk, the English language is really, I always say, inadequate sometimes to discuss these sorts of things because we have very limited vocabulary to do so. So I either say energy or consciousness, because that's truly what we are. This physical body is will be dropped. Everything here on the physical plane will pass away at some point. It's temporary. The consciousness is not temporary. So it because it is part of the divine, or what I call spirit with a capital S, meaning God, what most people call God. So that is eternal and indestructible.
So
And
what's the purpose of our physical body? Why do we come here?
in my experience, everything I talk about in podcasts, in my books, and when I read for clients is my direct experience. We come here for one reason, to evolve spiritually. This 3D plane offers conditions that don't exist in the higher realms. There's physicality here, there's duality here. We've all heard that about duality. You don't really have that. You don't really experience that as a soul in the spirit world because most people are on that level or on the various levels of the spirit world are of similar vibration or consciousness. Here, we have that dichotomy. We have opposites. We have masculine, feminine. We have dark and light. Night and day. That doesn't exist in the spirit world. Neither does time. This is the only realm in which we have the, it's actually artificially constructed as for a reference point, but this is the only place where we have time.
Interesting. It's so interesting. So, life is meant to be enjoyed, but it's not necessarily easy in this plane, in this dense vibration. Would you agree?
Oh, it's the harshest place to be.
Okay, great.
I talk to my spirit team. Everybody listening has probably heard of spirit guides. Those are the souls who have agreed to help us on our journey here. They're very familiar with our lessons here, our karma, what we've come here to do. And I always say to them, this is a really harsh place to be. And sometimes I get a little bit of sympathy, and sometimes I get nothing. Because most of the spirit guides, for those who don't know, they have been here. They've passed certain tests, I put that in quotes, to be able to do what they're doing in the spirit world to help others. And they're quite familiar with how difficult it is to be here. So it's sort of, I think it's the most difficult challenge, to take on. And that's why oftentimes when I do readings, I will say, you're a very courageous soul. People who have lost children, had children die or have traumatic experiences, abuse, other sorts of trauma, courageous souls. So it takes a lot for us to, sort of sign up for these lessons. In fact, in my more recent book, Wisdom from the Spirit World, there's a whole section called You Signed Up for This. And we're not going to consciously remember that.
No.
However, we have. And it's there in these things called the Akashic Files, which are connected to the subconscious.
So, yeah, I know that's a hard one for people who don't have the perspective of, or the bigger picture of what the soul is, what consciousness is, and that they feel like this is really all there is. But, I heard or I've read or someone has told me that spirit guides are often, they've often come here and they've decided to evolve in a different way. And they evolve not necessarily by incarnating here, but by helping those who do incarnate. Is this correct, in your opinion?
I'm sorry, I meant that I'm clear on what you're asking.
Okay,
You
so what I'm saying is, spirit guides, you said that they've come here before. So I always say, I'm not coming back here. I always say, I'm not coming back there. But we need to evolve. Okay, so if we haven't fully evolved in this incarnation, then we do have to come back. But what I've heard is that if we choose to guide others on their journeys here, become spirit guides, then we can evolve in a different way without having to come back here. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I don't know. I'm the first one to say I simply know what my experience has been. So in 30 years, that's how long I've been doing readings. Just about 30 years. I actually started with hands-on healing. I've been highly trained in spiritual healing and also a Reiki master. But quite honestly, I don't know. I do know this, that those who do help us, and every human being has help available. It's a matter of tuning into that, and requesting it, that those souls who help us have done many, many, the equivalent of years of training in specialty areas. So, for example, someone who's a teacher most likely has spirit guides who deal with the transmission of knowledge and also how to, communicate that. I've also seen, and I've mentioned this in my, I have a new book coming out later this year. It's called The Art of Sensing. It's about developing intuition and using intuition to navigate life. Those who help us have different areas of expertise. So, someone who's a teacher, I've seen also that they might have a child spirit guide who is able to help them kind of frame, put it into a framework, the information, and so it's accessible and digestible by a child. I do mediumship. I know that I have guides who that's all they do is help people, sort of gatekeepers. Some of you may have heard that term of the gatekeepers. And so they do help with the connection because, believe it or not, the souls in spirit do not automatically know how to connect with me during a reading because I'm here with a physical body. They are not. There is a specific technique that has to take place with this phenomena of blending. And that's what happens with mediumship. My soul is blending with the soul of that soul in spirit. And through the inner senses, clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, that is how it is received.
Do you have to raise your vibration and they have to lower theirs?
Absolutely. That's what it's called mediumship.
What
Because
mediumship is, okay.
up here in the physical plane, which is the densest plane, and then we have the spirit world, which is vibrating at a much higher frequency. And so the medium goes in between those two levels of consciousness. And that is why before every single private reading that I do a very brief meditation. I clear my own energy so that I can give my very best. I owe that to the spirit world, and I really serve them in addition to clients.
And I like that you said that we really don't come alone. And the work that I do, I'm a narcissistic abuse expert and coach. And so I deal with people who have experienced trauma, complex trauma, a lot of that. And so most of my listeners are people that have experienced trauma, and this is a very difficult life for them. I see it as a opportunity for tremendous growth. And I think a lot of, from what I see, from where I sit, I think a lot of souls are coming down here and taking on these major challenges at this time in our history. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we are transitioning to a different dimension. Humanity is transitioning, the earth is transitioning, and that we need all these people to heal and grow so that we can be here to help others. Do you have an opinion on that?
I would agree with you. It appears to me, working in the consciousness field, in the healing field, that absolutely karma, or in other words, karma simply means cause and effect. That's all it means. And it's kind of sped up now. Things are happening. It appears to be a much quicker rate than in the past. And it's sort of like, you need to clear this up. And I mean you, I'm talking collectively. On collective consciousness level, it's the same because each individual is also sort of that subset of the greater consciousness of the collective consciousness of humanity. And then you can go even further than that and say with every living being, including animals. The earth definitely has a consciousness. So I believe that we are at a critical juncture right now. I have seen it in my work. People are much more interested now in getting rid of the junk, getting rid of the pain. And importantly, one of the eight lessons in wisdom from the spirit world is our wounds do not diminish the light within. Anything that we've experienced in the past does not extinguish or limit or define us in any way. It can be used, and this is the good part about balancing all of this, to be used, trauma can be used as a springboard for growth if you choose that. And it's all from your choice. I have known people over the years who stay stuck in that. And so it can sometimes, it falls into the dangerous territory of being a victim. Victimhood disempowers people when you take on that identity of victimhood. So, are things accelerated? Absolutely. And I believe we're going to see more and more of this. There's also a greater dichotomy between morality and in accordance with natural law, God's laws, and the ego. So you see a divide. It's much more defined now.
Things are very stirred up right now. There's a lot going on. So I know that when someone comes to you and they would like a reading, that they usually have some kind of idea of what they want to hear or who they want to hear from. So that doesn't always happen. So how does that work?
In my estimation, it does happen for me personally. I can't speak to anyone else. About 95% of the time, that soul will come through that individual desires to hear from. And they're usually they're in most readings, depending upon I read for either a half an hour or an hour. Depending on the length of the reading, there can be multiple or several souls connected to that recipient. They are not always family. Sometimes they are friends. Sometimes they are pets. I've done many readings in which pets appear. In fact, I've studied animal communication, not as much as human mediumship, but I have studied it and I've practiced it. I don't bill myself as an animal communicator, but they do, in fact, communicate. And because they have never had language, it's usually through pictures or through clairvoyance and through sensing, clairsentience. So what I do to increase the chances of that soul coming through and blending with me is I ask recipients who sign up for readings to prepare. Have some questions written down that you want to ask that loved one or just ask in general. Also, open up a spiritual connection. Very, very important. Meditation, mindfulness, prayer, stillness. I tell that to every single client because that greatly strengthens the connection.
Does it take a soul time to learn or somehow be able to communicate back to the living? So when somebody recently crosses, do they automatically have that ability or does it take time?
I have connected at this. Everything I'm saying here is 100% genuine. I'm very transparent. I talk about my own life too. Spirits communicate as soon as the same day. I kid you not. And then I've had, spirits who take some time. An example of that, ones that take a little bit longer, or maybe there's somewhat of a resistance, is in the cases of suicide. That my theory on that, and they do come through, but sometimes they actually need to be invited. Sometimes there's sort of this resistance on their behalf because they feel that the recipient is angry with them. That, I took my own life, devastated people. So it varies. It can be very soon, or it can be that it takes some time because there is a healing process that goes on after death. I wrote about that in my second book, I'm Still With You. What happens after we die? And from what I have seen, we can be wrapped in light, different frequencies of light, what we would think of as colors. There are spirit healers who help with the acclimation, the adjustment. So it really varies with the soul. People who are generally at peace when they, before death, before they actually pass over, have a much easier time. And that is an often overlooked value of mediumship. And that it alleviates or helps to alleviate fear of death, that we go on, that this is not all there is. And the other often overlooked value, which I think is incredible with mediumship, is the eternity and the splendor of each soul. Really knowing. I talk to my father in spirit. Oh, he lives on the evidence that is given. So that means I'm an eternal soul as well. That I also have the ability to feel my father, talk to my dad, because of that bond of love.
That's incredibly wonderful. And it really is very comforting. Very comforting. For those who do believe in the afterlife, and that we do go on, and that this is a very temporary place, It really takes the fear out of living because the main fear is dying, you know, and if you don't fear dying, then you don't have to fear living. Because nothing can really happen, right?
You know, exactly what you just said. I have thought that so many times, and it's so such a relief to know that everything that I'm, if we can reframe that everything in the past, everything currently, and everything from now until when we cross over is merely an experience that our soul is having. That greatly diminishes anxiety. Anxiety right now, I'm sure you probably know, is epidemic with many people, particularly young people. I do not have latest statistics on suicides, but those may be up as well. Depression, certainly. If we can reframe life and know that I'm here experiencing things instead of putting this heavy weight on the past. And that's something I've done a lot of writing about is the power of forgiveness. the release of the past, that's simply what forgiveness means. If we can reframe things in that way, we can truly understand that things do not have, or events do not have the weight that our mind or rational mind gives them.
Interesting.
Frame them as experiences.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring up forgiveness. So you say forgiveness is basically letting go of the weight of the past, right?
In a spiritual sense, and
Okay.
that's how I'm always communicating, is from a little bit higher consciousness, I guess. I'm not saying that in an ego way at all. It sounds paradoxical, but in a spiritual sense, forgiveness simply means making a conscious decision to release the past and to use it to evolve, to progress.
Yeah. I always say to people, you know, your past is not a life sentence, it's a life lesson. And so when we can look at it as such, and then we go, okay, you know, that happened, but I'm here now and I have all this possibility ahead. Why do you think we hold on so tightly to the past?
There can be several reasons for that. One of them is it's for some people, it's safe. You know, well, or that would be number one. You know,
Predictable, safe, you
I
mean?
can live back there, or yeah, that's the known. I experienced that, so it sort of actually becomes comfortable to people. Greatest fear is fear of change. I also public speaking, you know, but it's really not of death like most people think. It's of change and of, you know, being vulnerable. And it can also become an excuse. If I hold on to my past, I can stay very sheltered in that identity that I have assumed because I identify. What does identify mean? It means to make your own, to take on. So if I identify with my past, meaning I'm going to keep it, you know, I'm going to, you know, carry that luggage or that baggage with me, then in some way it offers some measure of protection. Now, this is not a criticism. It's completely understandable that people do. I've done it. I mean, all of us in some way have done that. But what happens is when it becomes too heavy, that's when it must be released. And it's the same way with these family patterns that I've seen through multiple readings, thousands of readings that will come down the line. This very person will come in and go, you know, I was a severe alcoholic, for example. Okay. And then that wasn't healed in that particular generation. So the spirit, the recipient of the reading, they may be a drinker, or they have a child who is into addiction. Nowadays we have opioids, which are very lethal. It doesn't matter what the form of the drug or pill is, it's still addiction. So it's really, a matter of making a conscious decision to expand into the full potential of who we can be, who we were, but who, what our potential is.
It's interesting. As I said, in the work that I do, pretty much all the people that I work with have experienced abuse from a personality disordered individual that is just really determined to abuse and abuse and abuse. That's really all they do. To me, I see that as kind of a throwaway life for these souls that come here and just do, they choose to not evolve, but to hurt people. Do you have a view on that?
I do, and it's sort of, I don't know, multi-pronged. There have actually been scientific studies now because of technology, that they have studied the brains of people who are a serial killer, people who are narcissistic, people who are pedophiles, many different things. There is an actual difference in the brain. So that's on a physical level. On a psychological level or on a spiritual level, there is always the ability to make choice. And do most of these people know that they're doing something wrong? Yes, they do. So that way, it's a conscious choice. How much of that is involved in biology? Oh, I was born and I have this predisposition to harm others, whether that's with child abuse, pedophilia, or whatever it might be. There's still, in my estimation, a choice that is going on there. And actually, I've been fascinated for many, many years with the psychology of people who are like serial killers. I've read many books on that, a lot of them by FBI profilers. And this is one of the things that they talk about. And one of those individuals is John Douglas. He's written many books. And he was actually, he studied psychology and he was involved with the FBI. He was an FBI individual. And he says, in my experience, 99.99% of these people know what they're doing is wrong. So it cannot be an excuse that, oh, again, here I am, I'm a victim of my family. Oh, I was abused, so therefore I'm going to abuse. That is a conscious choice. So I do not buy into, oh, something just overtook me, like Son of Sam, let's say, who was a serial killer. Or Ted Bundy or any of these famous serial killers. But it's the same way with any personality disorder. There are predispositions, but the reactive patterns, that's what they're called, reactive patterns. It's sort of like being on automatic pilot. That every time I'm here, I do this. Those can be treated and interrupted. Narcissism, and I've studied that a lot as well. I'm always learning. I'm a voluminous reader as well as writing my own books. I watch videos daily on all different topics. I've watched many videos on narcissism, and I've seen where people say that it is one of the most difficult things to treat, with
It's
somebody.
impossible to treat.
Pardon
Impossible.
me. You
Because
said.
the reason is because a narcissist, the nature of that disorder is that they feel omnipotent. They feel that they're perfect and nothing's wrong with them. you cannot cut through that. And if you can't cut through omnipotence, they can't be vulnerable enough to get better. And that's really where it lies.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I studied in all of these videos. And there is a great that doesn't dismiss karma. That does not dismiss karma. So there's still that individual, that soul will have to view that in the afterlife. And importantly, and some people do not know this, that when we die, not only do we get the life review, but during that life review, we experience how what we did, our behavior, the choices that we made, how it affected other
How it
people.
ripples out.
And it does, because, it's like the old expression, no man, no woman, whatever, is an island. Okay. So just as good can ripple out, so can toxicity.
Yeah,
Yes. And
exactly.
that's why it's so important generationally to confront dysfunctional patterns head on.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. I'm really glad that you said that. And coming from this perspective, which I do, you do, and probably there's many people who are listening who do, people will often say to me, Randy, I'm suffering. And they just walk away and they go and they live their life. And I said, oh, yes, but that's not the end of it. Because at some point, they have to see what they did. And it's going to be so impactful to them, way more impactful to them as a soul than any healing or apology can be in this realm. So we all have to face it, don't we?
Oh yes, see, and I see so much of this today, particularly in younger people, but it can be with anybody really. The reality of personal responsibility is just that. It's a reality. It's not her fault, his fault. And I'm not saying people don't do things to us. Absolutely, they do. But there is always the choice to do with, our life, our energy, our thoughts, what we choose to do. And any action that you or I take is recorded in the Akashic Files. And if you think of a giant tape recorder that's always going 24/7, that's what the Akashic Files are. So it's an, but the difference is it's not a, magnetic tape. It's energy that is being imprinted upon.
Okay.
And that is why nothing evaporates. That is why I have seen the reality of multiple incarnations with people in which they're dealing with the very same theme or quality throughout multiple incarnations. This is work that came to me very spontaneously many years ago. I had never planned on it as far as prior lifetime assessment. I had never asked for that. It started appearing spontaneously when I did my work. And I finally got to the point I had enough courage and confidence that I would say to the sitter or the recipient, I'm seeing this or that. And have you ever felt this way, or have you ever experienced this or that? And they'll say, that's funny. And as soon as I hear that's funny, I know that it's spot on, that that individual is identifying with that, recognizing it,
Okay.
that they have experienced that.
So
So
some people keep repeating the same behaviors in their incarnations.
because it depends. But here's the thing. The lessons get stronger. If you have the right to ignore and go, you know what? The heck with it. I'm not going to ignore. I'm going to drink myself to death. I don't care. This is what I want to do. You can do that. But I will tell you that I have had personal experience from multiple souls who have come through and express regrets for how they treated others. And this is without my knowing that recipient. You know, I don't ask any questions before I do readings. I don't know who they want to connect with. I don't know any of that. But say that, you know, a mom comes through and goes, you know, I was too busy, you know, paying attention to my own stuff, to my own image, or, you know, I wasn't a good mother or whatever. Don't censor the readings. That needs to be communicated to the recipient. And that individual, then that soul who was, say, not the caring individual, will in some way have to balance that. So it can either be in the spirit world, which there is certain things that can be done in the spirit world with certain issues, but chances are that soul will come back and it may not be the identical circumstance. It may be that that soul meets that karma through another, through a different type of relationship.
Okay. And it probably gets harsher and harsher because the message is wake up. You know, you're not listening, you're not paying attention.
Exactly. And the other thing that I've studied for years and years, and I know we're not getting into this now, but I've studied astrology for years and years. I actually do karmic astrology readings for people in addition to evidentiary mediumship. You can see certain patterns in the birth chart, particularly with mother and father. The moon is symbolic of mother, the biological mother. The father is Saturn, symbolized with Saturn or the sun in the chart. So by looking at the chart, you can see what the incarnating soul took on to experience through parents, siblings, you know, other relatives, the maternal lines, say, for example. There's a lot of different you know, the language of astrology is the language of the soul.
I believe
So
that.
there's many different things that, you know, we can recognize that we need to address in a particular given thing called a lifetime.
In the readings that I've had with the loved ones I've lost, I feel the personality come through. And so when the medium is beginning to tell me things, the way that they're telling me the personality that I'm hearing, I know automatically who that is. So do we retain our personality? And I know this is a really complicated question because there is no time, so it's lifetimes are all on top of each other, right? I mean, so but when we're hearing, when we want to talk to somebody from this particular lifetime that is past, do they retain their personality for us to help us understand?
From my experience, usually not. It begins to dissolve.
Really?
However, when a thing like mediumship is taking place, like you were describing, for purposes of, you know, coming back into this consciousness, which is what they're really doing when they're connecting with a medium, you know, that midway point that we talked
Right.
about. So it's for purposes of identification. For the recipient, like you were saying, yeah, I recognize that's my grandma, that's, you know, my father, whoever. That would be because they're coming back into this level of consciousness, also for purposes of identification. In other words, they know what they need to do. This is part of that, you know, teaching process that goes on in the spirit world to be able to reach back here. because they don't have a body anymore. They don't have a rational mind. So it's sort of like I have taken many years of training in mediumship. The souls and spirit have to do that as well. Not maybe years, but they have to learn the process.
And how do they learn that process? Are there mentors for this?
Yeah, there are, for example, I spoke earlier about the different types of the spirit teams. My particular spirit guides who help me with mediumship, they know how to work with energy. They've been trained in that in the spirit world. So they know how to facilitate the energetic connection between me here in the physical world and souls who are not in the physical world. So they pass that knowledge along, but opposite. So, I mean, they would be educating those in the spirit world. Here's how you do it. And we can help to create that energetic link. There is actually an energetic link that exists.
We have an incredibly interesting and busy life as souls on the other side, don't we? We're not floating on clouds, playing harps.
No, I always tell people we're not sitting on the cloud, lounging on the clouds, playing harps with the angels. I have seen spirits engaged in activities that they did here. I have seen them in school. I have seen them in libraries because they were highly educated when they were here. And this is all through feedback, verification, validation from recipients. I have seen them working with children, working with young people, because maybe they were a teacher when they were here. Maybe they need to continue to heal themselves. They were abused as a child. So part of that healing is helping souls who have passed as children in the spirit world.
Oh, wow.
There are many different levels to the spirit world. Artistry. I have seen spirits who, they were artists when they were here. They assume that when they go over there. People who worked in the health field, doctors, nurses, clergy, anything you can think of, I have seen people engaged in over many, many years of doing readings.
So interesting.
It continues. It is. It's truly interesting. And there is a very good book. In addition, I always recommend my own books because I've written extensively about what happens when we die. What is the spirit world like? Because a lot of people want to know what do we do there? But there's also a book called The World's Unseen, and it's by a gentleman by the name of Anthony Borgia. That's Borgia. He was sort of a he was a channel. I don't like to use that word because people think of the woo-woo stuff, but it was a true story of what Borgia was, the information he was given by a gentleman who happened to be very connected to the Catholic religion when he was here. He was I think he might have been a bishop or something. I mean, he was pretty high up. And he brought this information through Borgia, and he described what the spirit world was like. So that's if you want to know more, that is a very in-depth study of the spirit world. And in my other books, I've written about what I've personally seen through my own readings.
Right. So, yeah, there was Edgar Cayce, who brought forth so much medical information. And more currently, there's Abraham Hicks that speaks through someone, although some of that I'm not so convinced of. But some of it I think is a little bit interfered with, or maybe enhanced, or whatever you want to call it.
I agree.
You do? Okay.
I agree.
Yeah. So Abraham, I don't believe that's pure channeling. Yeah. So, okay, so thank you for that recommendation. Okay, The World Unseen. Have you connected with spirits who are actually bad? Is there such a thing? So when we leave, are we spirits of light, or are some of us not?
There are many levels. If you are familiar with the Christian Bible, in which Jesus said, "In my Father's house there are many mansions," I believe, and so do a lot of other metaphysicians, that he was referring to the different levels of the spirit world. Based on, when I say levels, what I'm referring to are levels of consciousness. So the closer you get to the earth, the denser that consciousness becomes. And yes, there are dark levels. Yes, I have seen them. I have not spent time there, but I believe I visited them because I was going through a horrific time in my life many years ago. And I was rescued from that by a spirit guide. It was very, very vivid. It sort of happened when I was having a dream. And they are actually dark. I mean, as in terms of light, the lower levels are actually dark.
They're dark.
There's less light there. They're not pretty. They're kind of ugly and barren. The higher you go in terms of consciousness, the more light, and I'm talking, like light from the sun, physical light, and beauty that is there. So there are all different levels of consciousness. Now, someone who was a relatively, let's just say, evil person, so we talked about the
People.
serial killers, they will, until that consciousness changes, they will go directly to these lower levels. Now, there is help available, just like there is here. We could go to a therapist. We can, there are drugs there, but here we have psychiatric help and all of that with chemicals. But in the spirit world, it's basically saying, do you want to continue to experience the same level of consciousness? And there are those who choose that. And in fact, one of my teachers, I want to share this because it's so powerful, I believe. And actually, my new book that's coming out, I reference this book.
You'll have to let me know about that. We'll have you back.
Absolutely, I'd love to come back. You're a wonderful host. So there was a very conservative or rigid pastor. Individual who crossed over. He had been a preacher. He was very fundamentalist, let's say. This is the way it is. There's no variation. A fundamental Christian. So, and I'm not knocking that at all, but it can be rather limiting. The experience that is cited, and I believe this because I have seen it, when that person crossed over, they spent the equivalent of many, many years in the spirit world, pacing back and forth in one location, due to the closed belief system that they had.
Oh, wow.
And this preacher, because of his limited belief system, this is how important our thoughts are and how they determine reality, the experience in life. This preacher stayed in this pacing back and forth, for the equivalent of many, many years, until there was an awakening within him of going, wait a second, my own beliefs are here. And also, there's another example of actually a construction of a cage around the person. The cage was made of that person's own beliefs.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
Created this, what we think of a cage, but it was made out of thought. That's the difference between here and the spirit world, because in the spirit world, there's only thought,
Mm-hmm.
feelings, okay? Which feelings are an extension of thought. So
Interesting.
feelings come after we have a thought.
So it's
And
their own, they're caged by their own thoughts and actions. It's crazy.
I
That's crazy.
stress that
You know,
enough.
I had a guest on who actually wrote a book from a near-death experience, but he sort of tells it in a story. And in this story, there is somebody who was a religious, either a pastor or priest or whatever, who spent their whole life preaching God, preaching God. And when they crossed over, they thought, wow, you know, I'm going to really have it made. And they're faced with, no, you're not God. You preached God, but that was not your job. And you have a lot to undo. So, I mean, I can, you know, I guess it can affect us in many different ways. So let me just ask you this. So, okay. So in my work, I have seen the devil incarnate. I have seen people who are so bad. It just, you just have no reference point for it. When they cross over, they have this life review, but do some of them just go, I don't care?
Well, they may say that, but that's not what's going to happen. The truth is this: there is no external judge and jury that slams down a gavel and goes, "Oh, you're going to hell," or this and that. No, we judge ourselves, and the life review is part of that. So you can't. I know it's very difficult to understand because we're here in this, psychological place. But there's transparency. You can't not see what you did. And in fact, you in the spirit world, people, and I've seen this many times through readings, there's an intensity of light, and that's the soul, what the soul is radiating. Someone who is a relatively bad individual or made very, very poor choices throughout life, harmed other people, or was evil, that their light is very dim. And everybody can see that. There's no hiding, there's no lying, there's no duplicity. You are who you are. And so somebody might go, "Well, I don't give a crap, whatever." But that doesn't make any difference because the law of karma, which is an immutable law, which are natural laws, and I wrote about the seven natural laws in this new book, The Art of Sensing, that will be coming out in the fall. Those are immutable. They're nothing to do with human-made law. In fact, human-made law, most of them are. They don't mean anything. You can break human-made law and not infringe upon God's laws. Because we've all seen this where, in one state this is legal, in another state it's not legal. Different facets of human-made law are not aligned with natural law. As long as you follow those, basically, I would say like the Ten Commandment type thing, or the simple thing, treat others as you want to be treated, you're going to be just fine.
So, do you believe that there is innate good and evil?
Yes, I do. But I don't know if there's actually, do I believe, do I have I seen lower level entities, dark entities? Yes. Have I communicated with them? No. And the reason for that is the law of attraction. I don't emanate that. I don't emanate evil. I don't emanate negativity. So, I'm not going to attract that. So the people who have come through that are, they were bad in life, and I could give you many examples of that. They always express regret, always. Because when they go over there, they see, oh my God, I let my personality And my selfishness or my greed or my anger, I let that rule me. And that has to be atoned for. That has to be reconciled. One of the things my own spirit guide said to me, said, "Carol, keep your slate clean." I said, "What do you mean?" They said, "If somebody does you wrong, if you retaliate, if you go after them or you're vicious towards them or whatever, that goes on your slate."
Interesting.
So, now in no way am I diminishing or dismissing having emotion. Absolutely, you got to have, let anger come up, let sadness or whatever the emotion is, I don't suppress that. But the point is to not become defined by
Exactly, and impose it on others. Impose
correct.
it on others, right?
Because
Because,
then
you know,
it's carrying that on.
yeah, I mean, most of the people who come to me are not in touch with anger over the abuse. And I let them know that when they get in touch with that they're really in a good place, because anger means that you value yourself enough to be able to say, how dare they? But it doesn't mean going out and lashing out at people, you know. So I think many people have a, they're confused about anger. But anger is okay if it's productive and if it's within you. It's just not okay to be angry at other people and lash out. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's called projection. I think we've all heard that,
Yeah,
oh,
okay, yes.
he had a bad day at the office, or she had a bad time, wherever. And it's projected outward. And it takes a very conscious individual, and I mean spiritually conscious, to not buy into that, to not hook into it. We've all done that. We've all gone, well, yeah, screw you too, or what? I mean,
Or giving the finger out the window or something like that.
I mean, some people are begging for it, okay? But
That's true.
generally, yeah, you have to look and you go, that was them. That wasn't me. And that's especially important with childhood traumas, because children do not have the reasoning capacity to understand that, dad hit me, mom
Calling me
did,
names or whatever, right?
I must be a bad person. They don't want me. I'm unlovable. These are core issues. And
Yes.
I dealt with those so many times with clients. I mean, in mediumship.
Me
And
too.
so there's also an aspect of mediumship that is counseling, that is very practically oriented. So anyone who is worth their salt doing mediumship, I would say, is also doing spiritual counseling or, slash psychological counseling. I never misrepresent myself. I am not a counselor, but it automatically will come through sometimes. But
Wonderful.
yes, you're exactly right. The key is detachment.
Right.
There's a whole big thing, and I know we're low on time here, but Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, and Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth, Finding Your Life's Purpose, talks about the pain body. The pain body thrives on negativity. We all have a pain body. You don't have to be abused or traumatized to have a pain body. We all have it. And then there's a collective pain body of humanity. And right now, I believe we are really in the pain body in the okay.
Definitely.
The pain body feeds on negativity. It grows stronger on negativity.
Yes, it does, which is why shows like this are so important. We gotta spread the light. We gotta spread the light. It's the only way to distinguish the darkness. Not going head to head with it, not arguing with it, not blaming it. but extinguishing it through our light, our own life, right?
Absolutely. That's what we are here to do.
What is your website, Carol?
My website is Soul Visions, that's plural visions, soulvisions.net. There you will find all of my product. I also have meditation CD, a home study course for intuition, and all of my books are also on Amazon, Kindle, Barnes and Noble, Nook. My publisher, Six Books, which is an imprint of Collective Inc. So they're pretty widely available.
And you do personal readings, right?
Yeah, all of those are done through the phone or through Zoom. I've read internationally and I do read nationally for people. I've been very blessed. I'm extremely grateful to be the work that I'm doing. Humbled by it. I will never be the same person again after doing this work, and I say that in a good way. It's really opened up much more compassion within me. And I've read for incredible people from all walks of life, and I'm very blessed to have done that.
It's wonderful. It is a blessing to be able to help people, to have that ability to help people move forward. Well, thank you so much. We had a great discussion. This was wonderful. And this is so important, I think. All these topics, all these aspects that we brought up is so important for you, my listeners, because I want you to have a perspective that's outside of yourself so that you can heal, you can forgive, you can move forward instead of feeling, like Carol said, victimized by your life. There is another approach. There is a better way to do this. And that's what people like Carol are offering you. So it's really been wonderful talking to you. And I just want to tell you something on the other side. So when we're done, just hang on. I'm going to say something to you, okay? All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for the interview. It's been wonderful. So nice to meet you.
Yes, and thank you for what you're doing.
Have a great day. Take care.